Hello, everyone. This is March Twisdale, your producer and host of Focus On. In 2019, I began to plan for my 2020 series of shows. I did so in preparation for the completion and publication of my collection of flash fiction vignettes called Vashon After the Change. It focuses on what would happen to Vashon Island if we were to become inexplicably and supernaturally cut off from the rest of the world for 3 years. Aside from that one event that would separate us and leave us isolated, everything else was meant to basically match what I would imagine reality might be. And I plan to bring my research into the often forgotten or ignored resources that exist here on our islands, both natural and human, to you and yours. I wanted to bring you a series of interviews with islanders to explore and discuss these resources and our inherent self-sufficiency and vulnerabilities. That was to be the focus of my 2020 series. And so, in January and February, I met with most of the people who manage everything having to do with water on our islands. I met with all of the water purveyors except Gold Beach, the water treatment plant manager, the sewer system manager, and others. They were all gracious enough to bring me along for work calls, offer me site tours, or meet with me multiple times. Now, we exchanged emails, and sometimes they sent me home information to review. And a few of them have joined me here at the Voice of Vashon Studio so that we can share all of this with you. But this was before COVID-19 afflicted millions of individuals, with hundreds of thousands of them suffering extreme illness and death. Indeed, I was exploring water-based resources vital and necessary for those living on this bump of a rock sticking up out of the Puget Sound, while Breonna Taylor was still serving her community as an EMT, while Ahmad Arbery was still a healthy, vibrantly alive young man with a love of running and dreams of a good life ahead of him, and before George Floyd used a counterfeit $20 bill that the owners of the store he used it at believe he didn't even know was counterfeit, as this was an endemic problem to their neighborhood, to make a small purchase, resulting in his murder at the hands of police officers sworn to protect and serve all of us, including George Floyd. Now it is June 2020, and I'm going to begin to share with all of you what I have learned from our island's amazing and committed purveyors of fundamental water-related services that you and I and most of our neighbors take for granted. Let me explain why this is absolutely related to the current moment, because I have felt uncomfortable over the last couple of months with the idea of discussing water on Vashon, given all of the global and national events. But right now, we have an issue that needs to be talked about, and it has to do with gardening. If you're not aware, the island is bursting with gardening enthusiasm. Most seeds, potato and onion starts, and other gardening amendments have been flying off the shelves or selling out months earlier than usual. Seed providers online are wading through their back orders, with deliveries delayed so long that many, like myself, eventually gave up, canceled those orders, and started shopping locally. That, of course, furthered the depletion of seeds on our shelves, along with the toilet paper. And with this lovely wet spring, Mother Nature has been doing most of the watering for us. But this will all change soon enough. I'm not just a longtime gardener. I have actually been a farmer here on the island. I have sold at the farmer's market, and I have offered a CSA to my community. And I am concerned about the effect that both novice and new, or returning and experienced farming families will have on our shared water supply, on the water pressure, and ultimately on our pocketbooks. The point of gardening right now for many of us is most likely a desire to supply one's family with fresh fruits and vegetables if they run low at the store, which so far they have not, and to save money. We all know that we are at the beginning of this century's Great Depression, and that it will take years, if not decades, to work ourselves out of it. to choose to live differently. And so for many of us, we are focused on gardens as a way of protecting our families economically. But you need to keep in mind that water costs money. A lot. 5 years ago, when we had our first 90-day drought, which some of you may remember, my garden-related water usage topped $350 over a two-month period. And this was just a family garden. I was not farming or selling to other people at that time. As a result, I stopped gardening. Flat out stopped. And this year, I am back to it. With that extreme water price in mind, and I have some plans in place to try to preserve water as much as possible, which is what I want others to do as well. If everyone turns on their sprinklers and casts water to the wind and sun every evening or late afternoon when they get home, our shared water pressure will drop. Our personal savings will literally evaporate into the sky. And our collective future water prices may rise. So yes, right now is a time to conserve and to seek self-sufficiency in every way possible. Thrift is once again a laudable goal. And growing a beautiful garden has to be about more than throwing vast quantities of resources into it so that you can show your neighbor your glorious tomatoes. It's about having those lovely tomatoes and conserving vital resources at the same time. For the next 2 months, in addition to interviewing amazing authors, my focus on shows will be about water, water, and water. And now, on to the show. You are listening to Focus On. And today I will be talking with fellow Islander Jim Gross, who is a civil engineer contracted to manage Vashon Sewer District. Jim, how are you today?
Great. Doing well.
Awesome. Excellent. So we have a lot to talk about, and I want to thank you for letting me do a ride-along.
Yes. We had a potential backup, and you came along.
I have to say, honestly, I think about it often. It was so much fun. I mean, you know when you're like kids and you go on a treasure hunt, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's something fun about seeking and finding.
Right.
So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to all of our fellow Islanders who are listening. Tell them a bit about what you do, and then tell them a bit about what was going on that day and what it was that we were doing off in the bush.
Sure.
Okay.
So as you said, Jim Gross is my name. I'm a civil engineer. I work for BHC Consultants. We have an office in Seattle. We mm-hmm. do engineering work for water and sewer districts in cities and counties all throughout Western Washington. One of our contracts is to manage Vashon Sewer District. So I serve as the manager there. I've been doing that since 2012. I've lived on the island since 2003. Live on the north end. That day, we had a call for a resident who was having issues with their toilet flushing and their mm-hmm. sinks draining. Generally, I would say 95% of the time, that's an issue on their side.
Right.
Where they have an issue with their side sewer, there's a blockage there somewhere. But we will always go out and do some checks at mm-hmm. least to make sure it's not our problem in the sewer. And we do that by opening up some manholes and mm-hmm. seeing if the manholes are flowing, if sewage is going through the manhole. And in that case, that's what we did with you.
Yep.
We had a little trouble finding some of the manholes.
I know.
Because they can get buried. And they can be off in the woods.
So I just remember there we were. So everyone knows there's the, now you called it a right of way. We're going to talk about right of ways later. Mm-hmm. So if you're in town.
It's 103rd.
It's 103rd is the street. Okay.
Yeah.
So not everyone knows that. So, you know, folks, if you're like in town at IGA and you go walking westward towards that really cute community that built itself a while
Rose
ago.
Ballin.
Rose Ballin. And on the left, there's an entry point there to go into the trails that'll take you into the Center Island Forest area. Island Center Forest. There we go. But if you don't turn off into those trails, there's this big, wide dirt road that you're not supposed to take, but it's technically a right-of-way, right?
Correct.
And it would go straight up basically to where the open space is. Isn't
Correct.
That where it comes out?
Yes.
Okay. So imagine that road, and it's like gravel, and you've got puddles absolutely everywhere.
Right.
And you're trying to find a manhole.
Yes. And we can usually, a lot of times it's Murphy's Law. You find one, but not the one you're looking for.
Which I think happened to us.
Right.
And yeah.
So, but we did find enough that we could verify. We popped off the lids,
mm-hmm.
and we could verify that there was flow going through the manhole.
Yep.
So we were able to get back to that customer, that resident, and say, we don't think it's our system. It's probably in your side sewer. It was when I called him back that he actually said, yeah, we figured that out. They have
after we trounced around in the wilderness.
Right. They have what is unusually called a step system, mm-hmm. septic tank effluent pumping system.
Oh, my.
So in other words, they had a septic system and they just converted that to connect to the sewer, but they still use their septic tank. Everything goes into the septic tank and then it's pumped from there to the sanitary sewer. They found out that their septic tank was filled and the pump had failed.
Got it. So I just had this impression that everyone was on a septic. And then I learned, oh, right, there's a sewer. Because I don't think, are there actually street sewer things? You know, like along a sidewalk?
So you're thinking of storm. And the storm
That's
is
what they're
not
called, a storm drain.
Storm drain is okay. not connected to the sewer.
Do we even have those on Vashon?
Yes, there's a few places in town.
They're rare.
Well, like in front of Chevron.
Really?
There's storm drains there.
Okay.
I think there are some throughout Vashon town.
Well, what are they connected to, if not
those
the sewer?
Just discharge to an open outfall somewhere. So, like, to a stream. For example, you've read in the paper about IGA
just
parking lot.
Okay.
And when they do the car washes there.
Yeah.
That storm drain is pretty closely connected, hydraulically connected, to Shingle Mill Creek.
Oh.
And so that's why they're trying to do some controls for when they do the car washes so that
right.
that oil isn't going straight to the creek.
Interesting. Okay.
But yeah, that would be, it's a big no-no in sanitary sewer world.
Right.
To connect storm sewers to the sanitary sewer. That's called a combined system.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, combined systems are a no-no. That's mm-hmm. that's why you see these big overflows from the wastewater treatment plants occurring during these extremely large storms.
Oh, really?
Because they're getting so much storm flow
okay,
from the combined systems.
Well, this is so awesome because initially, when we first met, I didn't realize that you were like fully involved through BHC
right.
with all sorts of other water systems. So let's talk about this a little bit because I think everyone on Vashon really cares about the environment. We just don't always know how to protect it. So one of the things that we're going to be talking about today is how to protect the environment through how we think about what goes into the sewer system if we're connected to it.
Right.
But this is for this is a little bit outside of that for a moment. I just want to ask, so if we jump over to the headlines you see in the newspaper mm-hmm. talking about raw sewage flooding into the Sound during the middle of a giant storm, oftentimes it's talked about happening on the Seattle side or
correct.
You know. You're saying that the cause of that is that we have stormwater intrusion
in some cases
into the system that overwhelms the existing water treatment plant?
Right. So
okay.
It's not always what I would call intrusion
okay.
or INI, inflow and infiltration. That would be more
okay.
intrusion. These are places where the storm sewer is physically connected to the sanitary sewer.
Because, legally or accidentally?
Both, but generally okay. legally because that is the way it was done during that time period in history. So
oh.
there are certain portions of the city of Seattle's infrastructure
right.
that are combined sewers. The sanitary is connected. The storm is connected to the sanitary.
Okay.
So they
Wait a minute, then they know this.
They know this. Yeah, it's
okay.
very expensive to disconnect these.
It would make sense because you're probably having to basically go underneath all the massive
Correct.
Buildings of Seattle to do it.
Correct.
Okay.
You have to change all the existing infrastructure to do it. But these are called
okay.
combined sewer overflows, CSOs.
Okay.
Generally, the state regulates CSOs to an average of one event per year. So all of these places that have combined sewers are working to get theirs down to one event per year. So City of Seattle, City of Everett, et cetera, they're working to try to get their CSOs to that, to meet that. There's consent decrees, a consent decree level. And so a lot of our work through BHC Consulting, some of it revolves around that effort.
So you're telling me there is a consistent effort to try to improve and reach those goals, but it ain't going to happen overnight.
No, it's a long process. There's a lot of hydraulic modeling that goes into this because you need to be able to predict future storms and population growth.
Right.
Plus climate change, and all these things get added into the model. And so you run a series of models, and then that just tells you how much you need to prevent from overflowing a certain volume. Okay, now what do you do with that? Do you construct storage for that? Do you upgrade pump stations? Do you?
So storage would be like a temporary in the midst of a storm storage capacity,
correct,
which captures enough water so you don't overrun your system.
Correct.
And then once the storm passes, that storage gradually releases.
Absolutely. You got it exactly right.
That so makes a lot of sense.
It usually will fill up the storage by overtopping a weir. So you know, you need to set that weir height
sure
to where the model predicts or have it be adjustable. It goes into the storage, fills up the storage. We're talking
Lots of storage.
Yeah.
And water is heavy.
Right. So,
yeah.
The City of Seattle did do at least two storage facilities. One was Windermere, and then I forget the other name of the other one. And almost immediately after they built them. And so these were large storage, large projects. Like we're saying, I'm saying like taking 5, 6, 7 years to design this, to study it and design it and come up with, and then construct it.
And this is underground storage?
No, these were above ground storages.
Okay. Because you have a
I think some
slope,
was underground,
right?
But these, yeah, you can use gravity to your benefit. But I believe they were, one of them at least was above ground, and it's near the Arboretum. Almost immediately after they built it, they found out they were too small because we had a series of large storms, and the storms overflowed the storage.
And once you've built it, expanding it, making it a little bit larger is like way challenging,
right,
even if you can do it. So, wow. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so is there information, intel, suggesting that the Seattle area is going to receive greater rainfall in the future based upon climate change?
I think that's the I'm not a climate change expert, but I believe that's
yeah, but you're
correct
in the industry, so these reports are being brought to the table.
It's larger storms.
So larger quantity at one time.
Correct.
Okay. Because, I mean, otherwise, it's like our summers have gotten pretty dry, actually.
I don't think that our annual rainfall, though, has decreased at all. I think we're still getting the same average annual rainfall or more.
So the question is how much at one time. So once again, the idea of bigger storms,
correct,
drop more at once, and that's how you overwhelm a system.
Correct.
Okie doke. So if you missed the beginning of this or you got to leave and you're going to miss the end, go to voiceofvashon.org, click on the shows tab, and you want to go down to Focus On. I do another show called Prose, Poetry, and Purpose, but this is Focus On, and we're looking at natural and human resources and resiliency here on Vashon Island. So back to Vashon Sewer. Explain to our listeners, because many of them, like me, may not have any clue. Tell the people in Vashon where we have a sewer, where it doesn't go, and why it doesn't go there. Like, right, what limits it? All that.
Yes, and those maps can be found on VashonSewerDistrict.org.
Awesome.
So they're on there. So we serve, the sewer district serves the town plan, which is the boundary that was created by the Vashon community plans throughout the years.
Well,
so it's basically
their advice to King County and King County's willingness to agree with us.
Right. Yeah,
right.
They advised King County and the county created this boundary.
Okay.
And it's really a boundary that's driven by the Growth Management Act, right? So it's
oh, really?
It's
Tell us about that. I don't know what that is.
It's part of the Growth Management Act. Growth Management Act is a
state
requirement.
Thing?
Yeah,
okay.
It's a state thing that was enacted, I don't know when, '80s.
Okay.
That basically said we're going to try to encourage growth in these urban areas.
Intentionality in how we grow.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And so they basically said, you can't just do anything willy-nilly, and we're not going to just do straight-up zoning. We're going to actually have intention, and there will be limits on where you can grow your town.
Sure.
Okay. Correct. Okay, got it.
So we serve the town, which is basically town center.
Yeah.
It goes from 171st or Gorsuch Road down to Vashon Center for the Arts.
And not any further north?
Not any further north for the town plan.
God, okay. Sorry, I jumped the gun.
That's the main part of the sewer district, and that's the historic part.
Okay, so it goes from there down to
the intersection where Vashon Center for the Arts is.
Got it, which is where Mingleman is.
That's correct.
Excellent. Okay, so that is town plan.
That's town plan, and then east to west is, I don't know, it's...
It's a rough sense. Wait, do you take care of that community?
Yeah, it's 107th over to like 96th.
Okay.
On the other side.
So it's fairly narrow.
Yes.
And that is the town plan area which you serve, but you, to the south of that, you branch out a little bit? Or is it only Chautauqua?
We only branch out to Chautauqua.
Okay.
Chautauqua can be served outside.
As an exemption, you
said. Yeah, we, by law, we're not allowed to serve outside of the town plan.
Right.
So Chautauqua received an exemption because they're a school.
Right.
So schools, healthcare facilities, et cetera. So we also serve Harbor School at the north end and Vashon Community Care Center at the north end.
Okay. Yeah. So folks, if you've got that, we within our town plan, the sewer can serve there. And there's a couple of groups. I think you said it was daycare, school, hospital, healthcare centers.
Correct.
That are allowed to tap into the sewer, even if they're outside the town plan, which included Chautauqua and VCC.
And there's a process to that. There's a very detailed process where you have to go to the county and go to the state, and it has to be in your sewer plan and a whole bunch
So of McMurray and the high school are on a septic?
McMurray and the high school are on septic.
Got it. Correct. Now, I had the strange impression that you went to the north end.
So we
explain that piece.
In the late 90s, there were these areas called health hazard areas. Mm-hmm. They were areas that were served by septic systems, but the systems were failing, and there wasn't a way to rebuild the systems, redesign and rebuild the system.
Mm-hmm.
And they're primarily the area along Bunker Trail, which is right along the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the west side, it's Cove Beach and Beulah Park. And in those areas...
Oh, yeah. There's a second wastewater treatment. Okay, go. Right. Go,
so
go, go.
In those areas, a vacuum sewer was designed.
Mm-hmm.
They're right in along Bunker Trail, right along the beach. And then Cove and Beulah, it's some of the streets and along the beach. And those vacuum sewers go to a central location. The one at the north end that serves Bunker Trail, that goes to a central pump station, which then pumps it up 103rd, up the hill.
Right.
And then down the highway, and then into the collection system in town, and then to the treatment plant.
Now, you're a conveyor or conveyance?
Yeah, we handle, the sewer district handles conveyance only.
Got it.
There's no treatment done by us specifically.
So somehow the Bunker Trail area was a problem enough to the health of the Sound that they basically must have worked with what, Department of Ecology? I mean, they
Correct.
Got, and they were like, we need help. And they're like, well, we're just going to create this pumping system and pull all your stuff and ship it on down.
Correct.
So then it connects into your sewer system, which conveys it into the wastewater treatment plant.
Correct.
Okay.
A ULID, Utility Local Improvement District, was formed. So those residents were assessed, done an assessment. So they paid for that system.
100%? Or did the government also give grants? Or
I believe it was 100%.
Who?
They paid for it.
Okay.
And so not only are they outside the town plan, so we can't connect anybody else along that line, but they've also paid for all of that. So if you were somehow able to connect somebody to it, then you would need to work out how you're going to pay those residents back for all the effort they put into it.
Beulah
and Cove has its own mini treatment plant.
Did they pay for that?
They paid for that. Wow. That was part of the assessment. It's part of the design and part of the assessment. And that's operated, owned and operated by King County.
Okay. So, gosh, golly, it's sort of amazing how much stuff is going on down underneath the grass around here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been there a million times. Never occurred to me that underneath me was all this piping and water flowing.
Right,
and
all the infrastructure.
It's pretty fascinating as an engineer, don't you think, all of the stuff that's underneath us?
Well, as an engineer, I think a lot of what we do is taken for granted or not understood adequately. And so there's a lot that goes into the infrastructure, whether it's water, sewer, bridges, roads, you know, power, etc.
You know, the other day I hit a pothole. And, oh, it was dark and it was rainy and the pothole was like really sharp edge and it was full of water, so I didn't see it. And I was going 5 miles under the speed limit and I hit that sucker. Oh, my poor son, like his ears were burning as I just started cursing because I was so shocked by the harshness of it. I turned around, I took a picture, I was just outraged. And then later I was like, wow. That is a first world problem reaction.
Right.
You know, I hit a pothole and I got a flat tire, which is fine. And I had to deal with that. But still, I started thinking, you go to South Seattle roads, there's some places around here where it's just all potholes.
Right.
So all of us feel entitled to flush when we press that little lever. What should we not flush?
Yeah, we want to encourage people not to flush flushable wipes.
Let's say that again.
Do not flush flushable wipes.
Wait, I don't know if I heard that.
Do not flush flushable wipes. They're not flushable. They may go down the drain, but they really mess up the treatment plant.
Right.
And any pumping mechanisms that are in between us and the treatment plant.
So you're having issues with the Bunker Trail pumping system
We're
sometimes?
Having issues at the vacuum systems sometimes. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
And this is a common problem. In fact, there was legislation introduced this session into the state.
In Washington.
I don't think it's going to make it out of committees, but it's been discussed. It's at least showing up there.
Right.
I don't think it's a so-called ban on flushable wipes, mm-hmm. but it's to make people aware of the issues.
I think it's actually a labeling thing
where they're going to try to change the labels on the containers. And don't put fats, oils, and grease.
Well, we're going to get to that. Let's stick with the wipes for a second because
sure.
I also talked with the guy on the island who does most of the septic work. Mm-hmm. And I said, so what do you want people to not put down their toilet? Not flushable wipes. First thing, what I asked Lizzie at the water treatment plant, what do you want people to know? Don't flush flushable wipes. Everyone's saying it. So if you have a septic system, folks, flushable wipes basically look like a small baby wipe. They're usually about half the size of what you would think a baby wipe is. They're like, you know, I don't know, just think you're an elderly person maybe and you want to get extra clean or whatever your reason is. And so to make people happy, they're like, oh, just drop it into the toilet. Bye-bye. But what they refer to it at the waste treatment plant is they call them rags. And I was there. And sure enough, they were all gunked up in the mechanism. And they look just like someone had dumped a thin, you know, cloth napkin into their toilet and flushed it down. Right. Not broken down at all. And then the septic guy, he said that imagine you're flushing them into your septic, which is not flowing away. It's just sitting there. They'll get so backed up, they have to bring in like giant tractor equipment to pull that. And then imagine how contaminated the bacteria and how dangerous that is. And it costs the homeowner. Mm-hmm. So people, you just don't trust someone who sells you a flushable wipe. They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's the same rules as a septic system. You know, don't put anything down the drain that other than, you know, waste material and toilet paper. Don't put anything else down the drain.
What about fats? Let's go into fats, oils, and grease because I cook a lot at home.
Yeah,
fats. And I try to be really conscientious and I worry that I'm not doing a good enough job. Tell me what to do better.
Yeah, so fats, oils, and grease, also known as FOG, is a big
problem
mm-hmm. with sewers. It may go down the drain, especially when it's warm and warm water is used.
Mm-hmm.
But then once it cools, it congeals and clogs up the sewer. So if you're a restaurant or a food service establishment, you need to have a grease trap or a grease interceptor, and we have policies on that, and we check those quarterly. We have an inspector that goes out and does quarterly inspections, and he makes sure that you have a grease trap. And it's,
what is a grease trap?
It's basically a plumbing device that collects the grease and collects
okay.
the fat.
It's
after the point in the drain where you're dumping the materials. In a series.
Well, what I'm thinking of is you've got the fat that you're going to throw your french fries in, which is a big vat of pure fat. And I'm thinking that is...
You should wipe that out before... Wipe it out with a paper towel
mm-hmm.
or cloth before you put it down the drain and before you wash it.
Okay.
So make sure you get
but
any
the
loose...
But straight oil, they're not supposed to put that down the drain at all, right?
No.
Don't they, like, collect in containers and somehow... Where do restaurants send their oil?
So they do have, like, fryer oil. They have containers and stuff like that that they're supposed to keep.
Okay.
And then they can hire... There's cleaning companies that'll take that off island or take that away. Or you
like
can
waste.
Sell it to a biodiesel.
Yeah, I was thinking, okay.
You know, people that are making biodiesel.
Yeah, okay, great.
But this is more like residue and probably in pans. It's not
after you wash your
giant
dishes.
Bulk amounts of oil that
okay.
they're putting down the drain. It's probably residue from dishes and pans and pots and stuff like that.
All right. Okay,
that's
but that's
getting
exactly
caught.
What we're dealing with at home.
Right. You should wipe that out at home with a paper towel before you wash it, and you should throw that in the garbage.
Okay, so I remember people are going to laugh. I didn't cook much growing up, and we never had bacon in the house. My dad always did the cooking and just sort of wanted me out of the kitchen, not bothering him. So there I was living by myself and got bacon for the first time ever in my first apartment. I call up my dad. Dad, the drain's backed up. I don't know. He's like, well, what have you been doing? I'm like, well, I don't know. I had bacon this morning. He's like, well, what'd you do with the grease? I'm like, well, I just poured it down the sink. He's like, So I learned from that, you know.
Right.
So I pour all the grease. So everyone out there, we make bacon in our pan. Yippee. Now, I pour all the grease first once it's cooled off. Into a jar or into a trash can, or it's going to go to the trash.
That's right.
And then it's still all over the place. It might be little burned bits. I'll scrape it with a spatula.
Yeah, I'd wipe that out with a paper towel too.
Right. Okay. And that's my third thing I do. I pour, I scrape, I paper towel. And then what my dad taught me is to take soap and the sponge when the pan is dry, meaning like you haven't added water to it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you get the soap mixed with the oil, you saponify, you do something to get it mixed together, and then you can add your hot water and actually wash it.
Yeah.
Does that make a difference? Does it do something?
I think at that point you've gotten the large amounts of grease and fat into the garbage. At that point, you can wash it. You're
okay.
only talking about very small residues at that
point. So we're not worried about little tiny residues. You're just
no.
worried about the big dump.
Right.
All right. So let's imagine that we have a catastrophe, something weird happens, a mountain blows up, who knows what it is. I mean, you're in Puerto Rico, life is great, and then Hurricane Maria shows up, and 4 months later, you still don't have electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There are going to be some effects to some portions of the sewer, it sounds like. Tell us a little bit about what you want people to do if they're part of the sewer system in the middle of an emergency. And how they should think long-term. Go through that.
Right. So a portion of our sewer system is pumped.
Right.
It's what's considered a force main, and the rest is gravity or gravity main. The portion that's pumped is on the south side of town. So from Chautauqua and Vashon Center for the Arts.
Right.
Up to roughly the beginning of the main part of town. Like the Methodist Church near Chevron.
Right.
That portion, entire portion is pumped.
Does not have gravity on its side.
Does not have gravity on its side.
Got it.
So if power fails, those folks need to ideally conserve water and try not to put too much down the drain because they're not going to have that capacity. So a lot of those are individual pumps. From the residences. They're owned by the residents.
Oh, interesting.
So
oh, my goodness.
They're definitely not going to work Okay. If the power is out, unless they have a generator, and unless their generator is hooked in, the pump is hooked into the generator, it's not going to work. So there's a certain amount of capacity that they will still have in their pumping vessel, but it's probably not a lot.
This is similar to your situation at your own home.
A septic system, which is pumped.
Okay, correct. So folks, you might be thinking, oh, well, I don't live in the sewer district. This doesn't apply to me. But it actually might, because the gentleman from the septic system was saying the same thing, that a lot of the newer septic systems have this pumping thing. So for a lot of you out there, hopefully you know this, but there is an electrical component to pumping your sewer into the sewer system. And if electricity goes out and you don't have a generator set up to keep that pump going, you're going to end up with a backup. It means basically, if I understand correctly, the space between your toilet and that the piping out to where things would go away or stop, that's literally your capacity.
Right. There's a what's called a wet well, which the pump sits in.
Mm-hmm.
That wet well is going to have some capacity to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's for a small residential, it's probably 100 gallons.
Okay. And
total.
How many gallons when you flush the toilet?
About
3 to 5?
Yeah, 3 to 5, up to 8 maybe.
Okay.
It's not even 8 now. It's probably more 3 to 5, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you said that when the electricity goes out at your own personal home, the way your family handles it is you immediately start catching all of the wastewater that's not the toilet.
If it looks like
it's going to be a while.
If it looks like it's going to be prolonged,
mm-hmm.
we would do that.
So you're in your kitchen and...
So the way we handle it...
Yeah.
There's different... Think of the red, orange, green.
Yeah. Like
how they do with security. I would think of it like that in my own home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an engineer, so...
Right.
At first... Maybe you're not at an orange or a red level.
Right.
But if it looks like it's going to prolong for a long amount of time, for a period of time, say like the storm we had in 2008, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
when you went outside and there were no lights on, you went
mm-hmm.
down to the beach and you looked around and there wasn't a single light in the entire Puget Sound.
Some people went 10 days without electricity on the island, I think.
Yeah. And some people even in Seattle side, I think, went a couple weeks.
Okay, yeah, well, they maybe went longer.
Yeah. So that you're going to be
out.
That's
a red.
That's a red. And so we, at that point, would be just using the plumbing for essentials, like the toilet.
So let's think about this.
But
this
you
is
can,
every water that leaves, that disappears through a little teeny tiny hole, which means your washer and dryer.
You wouldn't be able to use that.
Those wouldn't be running because there's
no
electricity.
Right.
So this is more like the shower, the toilet, and the sinks.
Right.
Okay.
We would, you'd be surprised at how quickly you can adapt. When our septic system
mm-hmm.
failed, we were under those sort of conditions a lot. And so we would close the drains when you took a shower and
mm-hmm.
then bail the water out at the end.
Right.
When you washed dishes in the sink, we would not let any water go down the drain, use basins.
Right.
And collect all that and then dump that outside.
Which works, just make your soapy water
absolutely.
In there. Absolutely. Yeah. But then you have a rinse bucket. It's sort of like, it's like camp kitchen.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
But you can do a lot of that. It's challenging. But then the only thing that goes down the toilet is the waste.
So the thing is, you said that for a lot of the homes that are attached to the sewer system, so I wanted to talk earlier about the sort of the line of demarcation of responsibility, and because I was surprised. I mean, my thinking, of course, we all want to think this. We all want to think that the sewer system, the sewer district is responsible all the way up to my toilet, and that the water district is responsible all the way up to my hose. But the truth is that actually, you know, if something goes wrong in the water system anywhere on my property up to the right-of-way, bada-boom, bada-bang, it's on me.
Actually, it goes even beyond that. So our policy is similar to the city of Seattle's. You own up to the connection point to the main, not up to the right-of-way, but up to
mm-hmm.
the connection point, which very often can be in the street.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need to dig that up, the homeowner is responsible for fixing that.
And that would be many tens of thousands of dollars if it's actually in the street.
Right. Now, you would, if that were to happen, you don't have permission to dig up the street.
Right.
The sewer district has the franchise to dig up the street, so you would work with us to get the right-of-way permit.
Mm-hmm.
But those costs associated with all that would be on you.
So let's talk about working with our sewer district. Oh, but first, really quick, if there was a prolonged problem, also the people up at the Bunker Hill and all that, they're just basically, they're also an electricity pump. Same
right.
thing.
They
just
have,
just don't do more than you need to.
Those pump systems are all equipped with generators. The power went out last week.
Uh-huh.
And as I walked down to the boat, all those generators were on.
Yeah.
So they are helped by that.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, when there is a power outage, you want to conserve.
Okie doke. So let's talk a little bit now about where we exist in the world of King County, where we exist in the world of the state. Although it's mostly, I think, we're being impacted by King County. You've been talking about a whole cluster of stuff going on with cost. Tell us a little bit about the transition that occurred with regard to the previous wastewater treatment plant and up to the current one. Explain that.
Sure. Vachon Sewer District at one time was responsible for treatment, and owned the treatment plant and operated the treatment plant. But as the treatment plant became older and more obsolete, but it was also met by new regulations that required more advanced treatment,
right.
It needed to be upgraded. That upgrade cost was well beyond what the sewer district could afford. It was in the millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And so King County then took over the treatment plant, upgraded it, and then they now continue to own and operate the treatment plant, as well as many other treatment plants in King County.
Right. So your relationship with the King County owned and run wastewater treatment plant is that basically you are their customer.
Correct. We're a customer of King County for treatment. The sewer district is collection only, no treatment.
Conveyance, collection and conveyance.
Collection and conveyance.
Right. And
correct.
So you have
Sorry.
To pay them a fee, though, because they're providing you with the service.
Correct. Yes. So the fees are based on the number of connections and the volume that is sent to the treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes up about 70% of our rate. And so whenever they raise their fee, we generally have to raise our rates. It's
mm-hmm.
sort of a direct correlation.
Right.
The rest of our rate is made up for consultants like me, maintenance, clerk.
Accountant, I think.
Accounting,
said.
Right.
Yeah.
Accounting is a big part of it.
So Vashon's
repairs
business.
Yeah.
And pays the King County Waste Treatment Plant to do what's necessary, which is to take all of our sewage,
right.
all of our sewage that we create, and that it's however clean or not clean that it is, and then they take it and they do what they do with
it. They treat it, right.
And they're responsible for meeting the requirements of Department of
Ecology
and all that. So
they
that's
have,
not on you. If they blow it, that's their problem.
Right. They have a discharge permit and NPDES permit, and then they treat it and discharge it to the Sound.
Right. Okay. So there's that piece. And then there was some stuff that happened back in 2016, I think, in the legislature. So it's because apparently there's going to be some potential cost increases coming to the members of the sewer district.
Right.
And let's give some background and detail so they understand it's not price gouging,
right.
Or you guys want to have like a bunch of pretty flowers delivered to your office every day.
Right. I think it's first worth pointing out that we do have high sewer rates. We understand that. We're
mm-hmm.
some of the highest in the region.
Mm-hmm.
That has to do with being a small district on Vashon. It does have to do with sending all of our wastewater to King County.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the list of rates throughout the region, all of the top tier folks have their wastewater treated by King County. The lower
mm-hmm.
tier folks who have lower rates have their own treatment plants and have a lot more control over those costs.
Okay.
So we are aware of that. we do whatever we can to reduce the rates.
So rates might have been lower in the past when you had your own system.
Yeah, I don't know what they were
but,
in the
but
past.
But the system was also not producing the same quality. That's why they needed to upgrade, because the old waste treatment, it just was failing to keep up.
I don't know whether it was a capacity or regulatory, but my guess is that it was both.
Yeah.
And an age issue as well. So,
and no one really wanted to put down tens of millions of dollars to build
right.
a new one. Got
but,
it.
But, you know, like all of the ones that are at the low end of the range, the Midway Sewer District, the Southwest Suburban,
mm-hmm.
Alderwood, Lake Haven, they all have their own treatment plants.
Mm-hmm.
And they're good plants. They're well-maintained. Okay.
And they're meeting
all regulations, right.
Got it.
But all of the ones at the top, and Seattle is the top rate, but Vashon is within the top seven rates.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is outside of your control. And
but we do what we can to control the rates with the costs that we can control.
Right, exactly.
So then in 2016, King County passed an ordinance
mm-hmm.
That allowed them to collect rent on the right-of-way.
Let's define what right-of-ways are. So
yeah, so right-of-way is the area next to a King County road, or that is part of the road too. Usually it's a 60-foot right-of-way, but not always, 30 feet on either side of the center line. But it's where you put your road, the shoulder, utilities,
sidewalks,
and signage.
It's all maintained. We're talking about roads that are maintained by King County.
These are King County roads.
So if someone went out and built themselves a road in the middle
private
of their land, King County doesn't come in and go, hey, guess what? We're going to rent
right.
that. Yeah.
Private roads don't count.
Okay.
Right. So they're collecting rent. So we already pay a franchise fee to use the right of way. And that's like a franchise is usually like 24 years long.
Mm-hmm.
And then you renew it every 24 years. And you pay a fee then. And then you also pay for permits to do any work in the right-of-way. So you
right.
pay for a right-of-way permit for
and
every
we all
time.
Know how expensive it is to get permits in King County for
right.
pretty much everything.
They're really, yeah. So it's $200 for a right-of-way permit. And then, like, say you wanted to do a connection to the sewer.
Right.
You would come to us, say, I want a connection to the sewer. You'd pay your connection fees. And then you'd say, we need to install it. And the sewer district would get the right-of-way permit for you.
Right.
We have the franchise.
Right.
So that's $200 for the permit.
That's not bad, actually.
But then the county will charge for every inspection. So they'll charge for a pre-construction meeting and every inspection. And then
mm-hmm.
we collect $1,500 up front from you
mm-hmm.
and then pay the county out of that. And usually there's some amount that comes back to you at the end.
Okay.
But all that right. gives you an idea of the
that's
cost.
For a hookup. So
a hookup,
you're looking a little bit less than $1,500.
For that, only for that right-of-way permit. The connection fee itself is $33,245.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Yeah. Wait.
So
oh,
the
really?
Connection fee is $3,245.
Okay.
The right-of-way permit is a deposit of $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's an inspection fee deposit for the sewer district that of $500. That's
okay.
That's for our inspector to look at the connection and certify that it's good.
Right.
And then you get half of that back, $250 back.
So we're looking at roughly around 4,000-ish total.
A little over 4,000.
So when a person gets... So when a person wants to build a house on a piece of land, mm-hmm. first they go talk to probably Water District 19.
Right.
If they can get a water connection, then they talk to you mm-hmm. about getting a sewer connection, and then they move forward once they have those two things in hand.
Right. And they'll have to get a building permit.
Everything else, right, of course.
And they can't get the building permit unless they have their certificate of water and certificate of sewer.
Got it. Okay.
Okay,
good.
So in 2016,
so
they passed
yeah,
this resolution,
yeah.
or this
mm-hmm.
ordinance, right? Collecting rent on the right-of-way.
And this is sort of like you guys already are embedded into this right-of-way. You can't
correct.
Choose to not use their right-of-way. So this rent was an obligatory, unavoidable
well,
increase.
If you don't want to pay it, you can move your stuff out of the right-of-way.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not logical. It's not going to happen.
That's right. Part of the ordinance, though.
Well, that's great. Lovely. They gave you that
gave
illusionary
you that
escape. But the reality is it was basically an a new cost.
That's right.
It would be unavoidable. And so you said there was a consortium of people who actually challenged this.
Yeah, 21 water and sewer districts challenged it.
In King County.
In King County. This is only King County.
Right.
It's a longer story, but actually King County understood we were going to challenge it, so they preemptively sued us.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so again, longer story, more
yeah.
details.
But we allowed, don't have time for that today.
It allowed
okay.
them to set the court location. So they said, of course, in King County, the first round at the district court level, we actually won.
Mm-hmm.
The judge said, yeah, this is not kosher.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what he said was the water and sewer districts under Title 57 of RCW have just as much right to be in the right-of-way as the county.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially equal powers, and you can't...
I mean, you're almost an aspect of government because you're required for survival.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you can't just impose this rent on them. You have to... They're basically like an equal entity in the right-of-way as you.
Mm-hmm.
The King County challenged that to the Supreme Court, State Supreme... Directly.
State Supreme Court.
They appealed... directly to the state Supreme Court.
Okay.
The state Supreme Court accepted it. And then there was a hearing last year, and the state Supreme Court was unanimous, 9-0, on all counts in favor of King County.
Okay.
Against the water and sewer districts. This is the first time in the state that this has been done. The cities and counties filed an amicus brief on the behalf of King County.
What does that mean?
So it's probably coming to everywhere else in the state as well.
And they've got a 9-0 Supreme Court win,
that's
so
right.
Who's going to challenge them? So the point of us including this in the interview today is largely that for the sewer customers in Vashon Island, they can know you did everything you could and that increase is absolutely not grift within the system.
Right.
It is coming from King County. It's basically a tax and it's out of your hands.
Right.
So in anticipation, if you start charging now, then you can start sort of building up. So if they hit you with a big bill, you don't want to have to hit your customers with an all of a sudden big bill in August or something.
Right. Especially
okay.
if it goes back to 2018 and we need to pay
yeah.
all of that.
So the increase is related directly to that.
That's correct.
Okay.
And then I would also just add that this applies to all utilities in the right-of-way.
Yes.
So water, sewer, power, cable, gas, et cetera. We've already sent letters to our customers for the rate increase, which explained why. We also sent letters during the litigation and while the
mm-hmm.
ordinance was in public comment period. We sent letters
right.
out. There was an article in the Beachcomber that we did a whole bunch of things to try to get the word out. But
did you feel that people respond?
No, there's no response. Yeah. Yeah. You almost had to win that one in the court of public opinion.
Right.
Rather than in the court of courts, you know.
But the court of public opinion wasn't really paying much attention.
No, they weren't paying much attention. And maybe we didn't, we as a water and sewer collectively in the state didn't do enough, or in the county did not do enough to maybe get the word out.
Well, you know, you're part of this whole consortium of interviews I've been doing related to water, where it comes from, where it goes, how we clean it, how we care for it, all of this, because we have really incredible water resources on the island and very complex water resources and a very water needy ecosystem to care for and to be responsible to. So everyone I've talked to, all the water operators, owners of purveyors, board, everyone, when I say to them, what's the one thing that you just sort of wish your, you know, customers were doing that they're not? You know, what would you like them to do differently? Aside from
flushable wipes.
No yeah. flushable wipes. Aside from that one, everybody else says, I just wish they were curious and they wanted to know and that they had the slightest idea what was going on. Mm-hmm. You know, we only get a phone call when the tap runs dry,
right.
You know. And I can tell everyone who's listening right now, because we're about to end the show, I have literally been joyful in all of my tours of six of the different water purveyors on the island. I have been amazed. I have been fascinated. There has been zero moment of boredom. there's literally this, and it won't take long. You know, it'll take you like 3 hours out of your entire life to go out there, meet with a few people, and suddenly this whole world opens up that you didn't know about, and it's interesting.
Yeah, if I could add on to that.
Yes, please.
These are great careers. That these are, there's a lot of aging out of people in this world, the water and sewer industry.
Mm-hmm.
But they're great careers. There's a lot of job security and longevity, and you can pretty much do anything you want within that career. If you're into finances, you can be a financial manager. If you're mm-hmm. into data, you can be the data manager. If you just want to learn how to use heavy equipment, you can
right.
do that. You can be a laborer. You can work your way up to management. There's a lot of room for growth.
Mm-hmm.
So these are great, well-paying careers that won't go away. Everyone's going to need water and sewer.
Right, right.
So I would encourage you, everyone, to consider that. This is a major crisis that our industry is facing because there's a labor shortage and a lot of people are retiring out of the system.
Baby boomers.
Right.
They were.
So there's, it's hard to find qualified people.
Mm-hmm. And the younger generations are being funneled so much towards tech and
right.
whatnot that, yeah, because
right.
it's high knowledge, high skill, but it's not some glamoury, suity type of job.
That's right. These are essential services.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel good about the job you do.
That's right.
Water is an essential life element. Wastewater is an essential service. Treatment mm-hmm. is essential service. There's chemistry involved with that. If you're really into chemistry, there's all kinds of sampling and testing that needs to be done and analyses.
And you're out in the field sometimes, and it's interesting.
You can be out of, not in an office setting all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so these are great careers for college and for non-college people.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, really glad you came in today.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah.